to start service. Part worship, part entertainment, but you know what? You got to believe God was smiling with that. All right. I am so honored and pleased to be here this morning. I love being up here preaching the word, particularly on the first Sunday, because I get to claim it's the best sermon of the year for at least 6 days. But I'm not pleased for the reason for being here. Of course, our prayers do continue, not just with the Himes, the Mathises, but there's several other families that have really struggled this month, and so we continue to pray for you. And Jeff, if you're watching this, we miss you, bro. We can't wait for you to come back to your body here. All right, well, our job this morning is to make much of God as we enter this new year. 2022 is here. Who still remembers Y2K? Right? Water bottles and the dehydrated corn in your basement doesn't seem that far ago, but here we are at 2022, and there's much that spans before us, but we know that we serve a God that is bigger than the next 363 days of the year, and that's our job. Tonight, this morning, actually, we want to investigate a sweet doctrine, a sweet attribute of God. In a sense, we want to hang our hat on this doctrine. As this new year unfolds before us, I want to send you into this new year with something that you can grip, something that you can hold on to, because we don't know what's coming in 2022, do we? Well, before we go ahead, let's go backward. How was your 2021? Think back to it. It's kind of hard, January of 2020, but here we are. Your 2021, let's rate it on a scale. 10 means everything went exactly as you planned. Everything, every meal, every dinner date, every work day, every holiday, that's a 10. 1, everything went completely off script. Nothing went as planned. You burned your bowl of Cheerios. That's how bad your year was. Think about the number, 1 through 10. Rate your 2021 right now. I'll give you 1 second. Now turn to somebody nearby and give them your number right now. Okay, now what you do with that information, probably you're sitting by family or friends, maybe at dinner today you ask about that number and what made it that number. But let me ask you this, did anybody here have a 10? No, of course not. No one gets a 10 because no one ever has every day or every event go exactly as planned. It doesn't work that way. Now, maybe a lot of it does, but nothing does. I'll give you one example. If you would have told me at the beginning of 2021 that I would take Tanya out on a date, which is rare, with 5 kids, not that we don't love each other, but it's rare, I would take her on a date in 2021 that lasted 10 hours and cost $1,200. I would say, wow, I have really upped my marital game. This is great. Now, I did take her out on a date. That was 10 hours and $1,200. My original plan was to go to Zingerman's for a morning coffee and bagel, a nice stroll through the Ann Arbor's farmer's market, and then a quiet lunch, some intimate conversation, and then a nice shopping trip. We got through about 2 of those. We went to Zingerman's, we had a nice stroll, and then we came out to the van to go to lunch and noticed the van was a little cockeyed because the left rear tire was totally flat. Now, having never changed a tire on our full-size van, it took me 2 hours with a YouTube video going, lying on hot black asphalt in the middle of Ann Arbor, sweat-drenched, and then we spent the remainder 4 hours at Discount Tire writing them a check for $1,200. So there's our date. Not what I had planned, but there you have it. Love you, honey. Now, much of the year ahead may be similar. In fact, I brought my Ethnos 360. Did you get this calendar too? I brought my Ethnos 360 calendar for 2022. And just take a look at it. It's very exciting. January, blank. February, blank. I could go through all the months and all the boxes are blank because it hasn't happened yet. And so what happens with a new year, I think, is just the inevitable human approach of some excitement, planning, you're looking ahead at what's about to come in the new year. And much of what we look forward to are things that we're preparing for and we have great anticipation for. We're taking Selah on her first college visit in a month or two. That's exciting. Life's coming at her fast. We're going in March to the Smoky Mountains National Park, spring break, exciting. June 15th, 2022, 20-year anniversary for Tanya and me. In case I forget on June 15th, happy anniversary. I get credit in front of everyone for saying that, okay? But as we know, the calendar doesn't go exactly according to plan. And in fact, there's a couple things that we say, phrases we say that actually hurt us when things don't go according to plan or hurt us in advance. One of them is, that's mine. And we say this a lot in certain circumstances. When we say that's mine, we're claiming ownership. Like let's say you're at a football game or a movie theater or a show and you're walking down the aisle and you've got your ticket, seat B10, and you come to seat B10 and lo and behold, someone is sitting there. So what do you tell that person? Excuse me, sir, that's mine. B10, I got the ticket, right? We say that. Or maybe you're at the airport flying and you just landed and you're at the carousel with all of those luggages coming around and around. And of course, you wait and you wait. And after about 20 minutes, you start to wonder, is my luggage in Des Moines, Iowa? Or am I in Detroit? Where am I? And finally, your suitcase pops up, the little gray one with the crack down the middle, you know, and you put some duct tape over it. And you're about ready to grab it. And the person in front of you goes to reach for it. And so you say, That's mine. Whoa, wait a minute. That's mine. See the duct tape? I know. I need some new ones. Well, we often say that with our calendar to God. Maybe not in those words, but we look at the events coming and we subconsciously say, well, that's mine, God. I've planned for that. This is what I want to do. That's mine. You can bless it. Just don't change it. We do say that subconsciously, right? I want to tell you one of the greatest quotes outside of Scripture that has helped me overcome that. Abraham Cooper, Dutch theologian from the 1800s. I'm going to read it twice because it's so good. He says this, "There's not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, mine." Isn't that great? Every square inch of human existence, our vacation, our workplace, politics, economy, church, COVID, everything, Christ says, that's actually mine. Let me read it again. "There's not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, mine." So I should plan, I should prepare, but ultimately, not mine. Put that in the back of your head. Let's move on to the next phrase that trips us up as we think about the new year, or things we're planning, or things we want to do in these empty boxes. And that's this phrase, I got this, right? We might not say it in those exact same words, but often, a day comes, an event, and we subconsciously tell ourselves, I got this. God, I don't need you right now. I mean, things are going really well. I'm healthy. The bank account is full. All is well. I got this. Why is that a bad thing? Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. You're just missing out on the sweetness of this sweet doctrine that we're about to dive into here by saying that. And let me tell you two quick examples. This past week, Tanya and I were able to get together with a couple friends, and I heard the phrase, God's got this, twice. And it was such a sweet thing for that person to say that. The first one was a friend, a mother whose son had applied to college a year ago. Finances were a little tight. This son had the opportunity for a full ride, books, tuition, room, board, everything for this particular university. And that was going to be a game changer for this family. And their hopes were riding on this. and they waited for the letter to come from the university stating that this kid was accepted or not accepted. Finally, the day came, the letter came from the university, and the son came to the mother, nervous. Mom, the letter's here. What should I do? What should I do? And she said, well, we're going to open it, but just remember this. This letter is God's answer. Yes or no. And remember this. God's got this. If it's a no, yeah, we're disappointed. And yeah, we're going to have to go to plan B. But you know what? God's got this. And you could just sense the relief. Yeah, we have our hopes and dreams, but God's got this. Good news is he did get in. Second one, another friend, we had breakfast just a couple days ago. My friend was talking about some work turmoil, some chaos with his bosses. Bosses coming and going, turnstile, people getting hired that maybe shouldn't have been hired, and the impact on him was pretty great. And he was going through this, and he was wondering, what does 2022 hold with all of these bosses coming and going? And then he stood up at the end with his coffee cup, and he kind of just shrugged and says, but you know what? God's got this. And you could just feel the relief of like, this is crazy town, but there's something bigger at play here. God's got this. And he was okay with that. What a great approach to a problem. Instead of, I've got this, God's got this. So let's dive into this sweet theology I mentioned earlier. And that theology is this, God's providence. That's the theological term. The layman's term is, God's got this. You can use whichever one you want. I'm going to use both. Okay, so what is providence? Let's start with the theological term. What is providence? Providence is from the Latin providentia, which means foresight and making provision beforehand. And we can do that as humans, right? If you're going on vacations, should you make provision beforehand? I hope so. I mean, some people just fly off the cuff. That's cool, but not the Strongs. We book the VRBO in advance. We know where we're going. We got the museum tickets in hand, right? We've made providence, provision beforehand. So humans can have providence, but of course, we're not making much of humans today. What is God's providence? Well, much of what I'm going to share this morning actually comes from the Lifeway Sunday School curriculum that we're going through. This is actually a Sunday school lesson we should have taught December 19th, but we weren't here, so giving credit to Lifeway here. This is one of their commentaries here. When applied to God, providence, the idea takes on a vastly larger dimension than just booking a VRBO. That's not in the commentary. Because God not only looks ahead and makes provision for his goals, but infallibly accomplishes what he sets out to do. Providence, then, is the sovereign divine superintendence of all things. Now, that's important to note because all things means all things. And when we, where'd my calendar go? Here it is. When we get back to the calendar, right now, it's great. Every day right now for me is a 10 because it hasn't happened yet, and I'm anticipating everything going as planned. Are there about to be some one days in 2022? Oh, yeah. There might be some zero or negative one days. I don't know. All things under God's jurisdiction. Going on, though, he guides them toward their divinely predetermined end in a way that is consistent with their created nature, all to the glory and praise of God. So the providence of God is his holding all things for his goal of his glory. Now, that sounds wonderful right now. And we could clap our hands and say, yeah, God's providence. But that only works when things are going well. When they're not, when you open the letter and it says, I'm sorry, your admission to this university has been denied, that doesn't feel like providence. That feels like bad luck. Why did this happen to me? And that's where diving into this sweet doctrine, hanging your hat on it, is going to help us as we enter this new year. So what do we want to learn? Well, we want to learn that God, through his providential work in creation, including your calendar, holds all things together, rules over all, and provides all that is needed. And that should bring us such a peace, knowing that, and I'm going to keep using my hands here, because for me, I'm a visual guy. The image of Christ holding the universe, holding our country, holding my life and all the events should bring us a bedrock foundation of peace and hope and joy. Not because everything goes my way, but because everything goes his way. And that's hard because, well, parenthetical note, like you, I want everything to go my way. But let's dive into this so we adjust our thinking here. All right, will we see Christ in this? Yes, our job is to make much of Christ. He is at the center. Everything exists by him and for him, and we're about ready to see that. Okay, 3 points. Point number one, God's hand holds together creation. And creation means the stars, the sun, the deer in your backyard, and your calendar. Let's find this out. Colossians 1, 15 to 17, what an incredible passage. Colossians 1, 15 to 17. He, Christ, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For, it's like every word in here is rich. Just hear every word. For by him, all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. All right, what a rich passage. I feel like we could stop right there and the sermon's good, but we're not going to. To know what Jesus does, we must know who he is. Who is this Jesus who holds the earth, who holds your calendar, who holds those 10 days and those 1 days? Because on those 1 days, if you haven't thought through this, you're going to say, why me? This is dumb bad luck. And you're going to go down roads you shouldn't. If you grasp this now, those 1 days will come and you will be disappointed, but you'll do this instead. And that's our goal here. All right, who is this Jesus? Well, Jesus is the eternal Son of God, the image of the invisible God. When you look at Jesus, you see God. To see Jesus is to see God himself. I think we all know that, but it's a good reminder of this. Now, the other key word here is, who is this Jesus? He is the firstborn over all creation. Now, that term has spurned a lot of bad theology because some people say, some theologies say, firstborn, first created. Jesus was the first created thing of creation. No, not it. Firstborn here does not mean birth order. It means preeminence. Preeminence. If you're preeminent over something, you're over it, you're beyond it, you're above it. You're superior to it. You're preeminent. That's what Jesus is with firstborn. Not the first created. He's over, superior, beyond creation. That's critical to know too. All right. What does this Lifeway commentary say about Jesus and him and creation? Truth about his earthly ministry rests in the fact that Jesus is the eternal Son of God. He is the image of the invisible God, meaning when you look at the life, the ministry, and the work of Jesus, you see God. Hebrews 1:3 says he's the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. So when my days don't go the way I want them to, who can I trust? Jesus, God, the creator of the world. Is that somebody I can trust? Oh, yeah. Going on, Paul says Jesus is before all things, and in him all things hold together. I've heard it say before, the world would just fly apart in different molecules if Jesus wasn't holding it by his hands. This Jesus, who is the image of God, and the one by and through whom and for whom all things were made existed before creation. This triune God is eternal, and all things that come after are dependent on him. Now, let's just stop there for a minute. All things are dependent on him. How about politics? Is the Republican and Democrat Party dependent on God? Oh, yeah. Who put our president in power? Not the voters. It was God. It was God. Whether you like it or not, it was God. Our government is dependent upon Jesus. How about North Korea? Let's go to an extreme example. North Korea, are you familiar with it? I've actually been to North Korea. Did you know that? I have stepped foot in North Korea. Tanya and I lived in South Korea. And you can go to the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone, and take a tour of it. You have to pay to take a tour of it. And then there's a small house on the DMZ where they would have their peace negotiations. And in the middle of the house, down the middle of the negotiating table, is a white line denoting North and South. And the tour guide said, you can go ahead and step across the white line to say you've been in North Korea. Now, I haven't actually been in the country other than that white line, thank goodness. It's not a place you want to be. Horrific stories coming out of there over the past few decades. Kim Jong-il, the dictator there now, his son Kim Jong-un, just godless country, dictatorship, people treated horribly. Is that country dependent on Jesus, God, or is it a godless nation? Well, it's godless in the sense they don't proclaim it, but nothing happens in that country without the hand of God holding it together, as hard as it is for us to understand that. All things. How about COVID? Well, let's go back here. I'm going to read the verse. Does God really control North Korea and our two Republican parties and Democrat parties? By him, all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, viruses or not, thrones or dominions, rulers or authorities. I think that covered it. Yeah, we may not like it or understand it, but that understanding should give us a peace that passes understanding, right? How about the economy? You can't walk into a restaurant, specifically a fast food, without a sign that says, please forgive us, we're short-staffed. I feel bad for those places, right? You order something from Amazon and you hope it's not in a container ship out in Los Angeles Harbor someplace, right? Things are kind of crazy now. Does the economy operate on its own? Total dependence on Jesus. Like it or not? How about your family? Tanya and I, again, had some interactions with some dear friends who two different couples, Christian couples, are heading toward divorce fast, they were sharing with us. Heartbreaking. Is Jesus in control of that situation? He is. How about your kids? Some folks struggling with kids, in-laws, outlaws, whoever. Jesus is in control of your family. You're dependent on him. All things. And this one should really bring us a hope. How about salvation? Do you depend on him for salvation? Well, because Jesus is God and creator and sustainer, our salvation is sure and our hope is sure. Thank God for that, right? If it depended on us, how quickly would we fall? So here's what I want you to do. This is point number one. This year, if something happens that you are unsure of, disappointed, or heartbroken by, fill it in this blank. Blank was created through him and for him. That'll help change the narrative. North Korea, Kim Jong-un, was created through him and for him. How on earth could Kim Jong-un be created for him? Kind of like Pharaoh from Egypt. We just studied that in Sunday school. Pharaoh was created for God and his glory. You can read that passage. You see it. Your family, your job, your burned bowl of Cheerios created through him and for him. When something comes up and you're disappointed or angry about it, plug it into that sentence and change your narrative. All right, point number two. God's hand, again, I'll give you this. God's hand rules all in righteousness. What a wonderful thought. It's like that phrase, God is sovereign and he's good. If we didn't have both of those, we'd be in big trouble, right? If God was sovereign and evil, kill me now. I don't want to be in a world where there's an evil sovereign God. Can you imagine that? What if God was good but not sovereign? Well, who cares? He's got no power. We serve a God who does both. And here's the same thing. God's hand rules over all in righteousness. Check out Psalm 103, 15 to 19. As for man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower of the field, for the wind passes over it and it is gone, and its place knows it no more. But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children, to those who keep his covenant and remember to do his commandments. The Lord has established his throne in heaven, and his kingdom rules over all. Another great passage. This passage really shows the contrast between God and man. And this is not set up to dishearten us because we fall on the lower side. This is to elevate God to give us a hope and a peace. The first contrast is really mortality. God, everlasting to everlasting. He is the great I am. Humans, mortal. Newsflash, we are all going to die. All of us. Because of sin. Now, we try to escape this in many different ways, right? Cosmetics, health, healthy eating, you name it. In subtle ways. 60's the new 40, we tell ourselves. 70's the new 50, 8, I don't know. You keep going, right? 100's the new 80. Some comical things, though, from the past. Qin Shi Huang, the first emperor of the Qin dynasty. Now, Tanya and I have actually been to his mausoleum. It's in Xi'an, China. It's the Terracotta Museum, where all of those terracotta soldiers are under the ground. An amazing sight. Crazy sight. He set up this whole army underground to protect him in the afterworld. Qin didn't want to die. I think he kind of liked being the emperor. I mean, I think he had a pretty good life. And so he was obsessed with being immortal. So he started to send out his minions across the land to find what was going to be a celestial elixir to keep him alive forever. He didn't want to die. He liked his life. Well, he ended up, as story goes, drinking mercury sulfide. He thought that was the elixir. And that didn't go so well. So he died, ironically, a young age from drinking the elixir he thought was going to keep him alive. Another crazy story is Buddhist monks from the 11th to the 19th century wanted to live forever, so they went through a process of self-mummification. Yes, you heard that right. Self-mummification. Mummifying yourself while you're alive. Tells you how desperate humans are to not be mortal. So you would eat nothing but tree bark or roots. For 1,000 days, for over 3 years, you would eat just tree particles. And then you would drink increasingly more amounts of a toxic tea, which would rid your body of certain things. As you felt yourself getting close to death, you would lower yourself into a casket around burning coals with a little tube of air and ring a bell every day. And when you stopped ringing the bell, your people would pull you out and see if you'd become mummified. I did not make this up. That's where humanity is in trying to overcome mortality or immortality. God is not like that. We are. But what's the bigger picture here? Well, the bigger picture is the solution to our mortality can't come from ourselves. You can try to self-mummify. You can try to find a celestial elixir. You can eat nothing but health foods, exercise, and buy the best cosmetics. It's not going to work. At the end of 2022, you are 1 year closer to death. Now, that shouldn't be disheartening to you. It should be heartening in the sense that our God is not. We do not serve a mortal God. We serve an immortal God. It's not about us. We're making much of him. Because God sits on the heavenly throne above and beyond his creation, he's able to guide us through all of history. We know that his plans cannot be thwarted. His promises come true. An emperor may die a premature death. Our emperor does not. That's heartening. as I walk into an unknown year. You see, God says over your life, mine. Does he want you to live to 95? Maybe, or maybe not. But guess what? Over all the domain of history and time, he looks at your life and says, that's mine. Now, it's hard for us because we want to hold on to our life. Let it go. It's God's. It's God's. You see, ultimately, God's got this. All right, point number three. God's hand provides what you need. Now, this one is also a little hard for us. God's hand gives us what we need. Throughout this upcoming year, there's going to be many things you want. You want. He's going to give you what you need. And when you trust in him for the need, you're able to relax. Like my two friends walking through a hard situation, in the end, opening up their hands and said, God's got this. It might not be what I want, but God's got this. All right, Matthew 6, 25 to 34, a little longer passage. Most of you are familiar with this, but such great thoughts. Does he give us what we really need? Yes. Listen to this. Matthew 6, 25 to 34. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? You worry warts out there, put that verse in your head. We're coming back to it. And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, that's you and me, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Great passage for us as we head into 2022. But some of you are more prone to anxiety. Not going to ask you to raise your hands. You know who you are. Things come up and you worry. What's tomorrow going to be like? There's a lot of blank boxes. Is it going to be bad? Well, what is our approach? What should our approach be? Well, I almost view this a little bit like a argument in a court of law. A prosecutor stands up. There's been an allegation. God's not going to take care of this particular person on trial. We can't trust God. And the prosecutor, the defendant, whoever, stands up and says, several thoughts here, Your Honor. First question, is life more than basics? And the jury has to think about it. Well, let's see. Let's go back to our evidence here. Do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or drink, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Yes. Life is actually more than just what I'm going to wear or eat. As much as we get caught up in that, the answer is, yeah, there's more to it. And he brings out Exhibit A. Look at the birds. These birds, they don't have to go to work. They're not putting money into a 401k. They're not worried about the transmission on your car. And yet, look at them. Look at them. That's amazing. Look at the color on that plume. Who did that? Oh, God did. God did that for a bird who doesn't even work for it? Yes. Another question. If he does that for a bird, would he not do that for you, his child? Ergo, you have immense value. Do you really need to worry? If God treats a bird that way and you're his child? Do you see how there's kind of this logical flow to it? And he brings up another exhibit. Exhibit B, look at lilies of the field. Not even the most spectacular king in history, probably Solomon, was dressed like that. And look at these lilies. Spectacular in and of themselves. And he goes on to say, don't worry. And I could say this, therefore, God's got this. God's got it. Don't worry. It's providence. God's got this. We see Jesus is setting up a heart posture. Whether you have much or whether you have little, the command is the same. Don't let the worries of this world, and I would say, I'm just narrowing it down, of this next year. There's a lot of things to look forward to. Some of you are looking at things coming up fast that are not positive. Surgeries, hard times, relationships. And they're not pleasant, and they're not going to be 10 days. How do I approach those things that are coming at me? I know it's coming. I know there's a one day coming at me. Is worry the approach to have? The command is the same. Don't let the worries of life consume you. Don't worship possessions. Don't pine over what you're going to wear or eat. Seek God's kingdom, rest in his love, and he'll give you what you need. Oh, he's not going to take away the hurt, the harm, the disappointment. That's not how we set things up. He's going to give you what you need, though. So this essential doctrine, this God's providence, what do we take away from this? Well, it refers to his work and involvement in creation. He is not a disengaged God. He's preserving his creation. He governs the world, not our government, not Kim Jong-un. He governs it. He cares for his people. And Christians believe, this is what we should believe, even the cosmos itself is contingent upon God. We cannot exist apart from him. We believe that he is personally and directly involved in this world, and it affects not just the natural order, but me individually. Yeah, he holds the stars in his hands. He makes sure that Venus and Pluto don't collide, but he's able to dial it down to a microcosm of my life tomorrow morning at 6 as we wake our kids up to go to school after 2 weeks of sleeping in. Not going to be a 10 morning, I can tell you that. So how do I respond to all of this providence? Well, here it is. Because Jesus is at the center. Jesus is at the center. And we know who Jesus is. The image of the invisible God, the firstborn preeminent one. All that we do is done for him and his glory as we live with complete dependence and trust in his provision. That's what's coming. Good days, bad days ahead of us. But it's the providence of God that holds things and provides. And ultimately, my task is not to build my kingdom, but to point to him and show him much glory. So do me a favor. This is what I'm doing every morning of the day. I'm going to challenge you to do this too. As you get in your car or your bike or your scooter or however you get to work, church, or your friend's house, look up at the sky at some point and just say this, God's got this. That'll change the day. It's not you. It's not me. It's not the government. God's got this day. Come a 10 or come a 1, God's got this. And I pray that for us as we go forward. Let me ask for God's blessing. Father, you are preeminent. You are the creator. You are the sustainer. You hold the cosmos together. All things depend on you. Nothing happens outside of your jurisdiction. Give us a joy and hope and peace in that, especially on the one days. And I pray that each morning we would start the day off reaffirming, confirming, and encouraging that you've got it, not us. And I pray especially when those one days do come, that doctrine, that theology would come back hard and fast to our minds and our hearts and would solidify us and calm us, knowing that you've got this. And we praise you for this in your name. Amen.